Here is how it works. Example. It's
Let's
a
say
story.
I'm a guy in an office. I'm in my little cubby cubicle hole. This is how powerful we are. I'm typing away. I'm miserable.
Hate my job.
I don't believe
Can't stand
I'm God.
It.
I hate my job, hate everything. So I'm sending out these thoughts. And these thoughts are making the office more miserable.
And everybody's thinking the same in the office. Oh, God, I can't stand
it. More negative. I can't wait to get out of here. Is it time yet? I hate this place. Ugh. And then all of a sudden I get a postcard. My friend just sent me a postcard from Hawaii. I look at it and beautiful Hawaiian dancer. Remember, I'm a guy. Beautiful Hawaiian dancer.
Oh, you're not gay?
No.
Okay.
I'm looking at this beauty Hawaiian dancer, and then there's a guy on a surfboard and this wave back there. I go, oh, I want to be in Hawaii. Now, these are my thoughts. Oh, I want to be with
She's
that
dreamy.
Hula dancer. I want to be in Hawaii. I hate this job.
She's using her imagination.
Our thoughts are all powerful. So I'm creating these thoughts. Forms all around me, these energy fields infused with my particular stamp.
Let me interject a second. Remember, everything is only energy in consciousness, right? There's nothing that is not energy or consciousness, and that's what she's saying. You create this energy, this consciousness.
I am God. Our thoughts are all powerful. So I'm looking, I put it on my screensaver, Hawaiian dancer.
Dreaming.
Surfer, I want to be in Hawaii. I hate my job. More and more thought forms. Months go by, maybe a year, I still have that Hawaii.
Now she's infusing a lot of emotional energy into this thought.
Hawaii, the hula dancer, the surfer, Hawaii. I take the postcard, it's lunch break, go across the street, don't pay attention, I'm looking at the postcard, creating more thought forms, infusing them with my divine powers. Cross the street, boom, don't watch where I'm going, I get hit by a bus.
Body dead.
Body's gone, but thought forms alive and well.
Consciousness, still totally aware and conscious with your particular signature of your imaginative dream experience that you dreamt while you were in a body.
For maybe years go by, there is no time, truly.
It changes. It's changeable.
Within a matter of moments, a bouncing baby boy is born in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Except he has no clue why.
Why? But as your God self, yes, we know why. Because we desired it, we created it, we manifested it. We are God. This is how powerful our thoughts are. So, grows up to be a handsome young man, cannot figure for the life of himself why he's only attracted to hula dancers. All his girlfriends have been hula dancers. And he's out there surfing. And he's such a handsome young man. All his girlfriends are saying, you should be in Hollywood. You should be in the movies. So he's out there.
You're more handsome than Brad Pitt.
So he's out there surfing, thinking, oh, maybe I'll be discovered. Yeah, Hollywood. Now more thought forms, runaway mind. In the future, creating thought forms. He's out there surfing, thinking, Hollywood, maybe I'll be discovered. Maybe there's a talent scout on the beach. I'll look my best as I surf in. All he can think about is Hollywood. And I was so good in my school play. Maybe I'll be discovered. The parties in Hollywood. Do whatever I want. Yeah, I can be an actor. I want to be an actor in Hollywood. Pretty soon, who knows how amount of time goes by, he's creating these fantasies, these thoughts of the future, of how he wants to be in Hollywood, become an actor. He's not paying attention to his surfing, and pretty soon a white shark comes by and gobbles
him up. Body gone again.
Thought forms, alive and
well.
Well.
Kicking, waiting with your particular thumbprint right there.
Next lifetime, a little girl is born in Hollywood, California. Born into a perfect setup, father's director, mother's actress. So, of course, I go into the acting field and fulfill this fantasy, and I become an actress. I grow up, I'm pretty good. I become
famous.
Pretty famous, and I get married once, twice, three times. Pretty
Four
soon, I'm
times.
Just divorced. I'm at the parties, doing drugs, fulfilling all of my fantasies, all of my desires. crying in my soup. Why doesn't anybody love me? I just want someone to love me.
Love me, for me.
I wish I wasn't so famous. Then they'd just learn to love me, and then I wouldn't have all this money. They love me for my money. I just wish I could marry the boy next door like Grace did, and my friend
High school
Gladys.
Sweetheart.
I just, I'm so miserable. I want this. I want that. And pretty soon you're at a party, crying, just miserable, depressed, and you take too many drugs, the body overdoses, boom, body gone, but mind and thought forms alive and well. Pretty soon you're born in Little Rock, Arkansas. You grow up, you marry the boy next door,
and
live
on and on.
You are God. Your thoughts are all powerful. You have no one to blame for anything in your creation that you've created except yourself. When you discipline and silence this monster mind, because it has stolen your power away.
Do you understand how we create everything?
Our creation.
Nothing was created for us by anyone else. You are responsible for every single thing that you have ever experienced, will ever experience, and have ever experienced. You are God. You created it. But by believing that you are separate from your source, from the primal source, you then have karma. Because this separate signature that you believe that you are attracts to it all of its actions and reactions.
Imagine all a size family. If each one of us, as we leave, this weekend's over, as we spread out and go our ways, and we carry this knowledge that whatever I think will come about, whatever I manifest, whatever I infuse will happen.
Imagine.
If we spread out and share love and light and open hearts wherever we go. Man, you're doing a business deal. You're shaking someone's hand. As you're shaking and closing a deal, may his heart be open to the truth that he is God. And may his life be filled with joy, love, and laughter. And so it is. Good. Nice doing business with you.
If you're a mechanic, you're working on the car. Say, hey.
Whoever is in this car, may their lives be safe, may the car work well, and may their hearts be open to the truth that they are God, have always been God, and so it is.
If you're a doctor, still practicing how to do it.
Usually when doctors first see a patient, they're with the stethoscope and they're listening to the heart. What a perfect time and opportunity in your thought forms. Hearts be open to the truth that they are God, have always been God, and may their lives be filled with joy, love, and laughter. And so it is. You are now using your divine powers, using your divine mind to be Swami, to be God, which you've always been.
If we go out and eat an ice cream, here we are, right?
Enjoying. You're eating the ice cream, enjoying it, and you finish it, and you go, oh, damn, I forgot to share it with all of creation, and it was so good. Well, it's okay. You remembered, you forgot, because for hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, we forgot we even had this power. So, get another ice cream.
Do it again.
It's simple. God is simple. Start having fun with your powers, with your spirituality.
Remember, Jesus said, be ye like little children, and you're close to the kingdom of heaven. It's exactly
husbands,
the same.
Wives, when you're in that embrace of love, don't be selfish and just love each other. Do you realize how powerful this loving is? When you're in this embrace, don't just embrace each other. Imagine you are embracing all of creation in this warm embrace of love.
Speaking about this, let us explain something.
If you forget at the time of climax to do this, say, honey, I forgot to share it with all of creation. We're going to have to do it again. Okay.
But let us explain something here that Swami showed us. And you have no idea how our loving energy is experienced on the astral level and the causal level, which are still illusion, but they're still part of the game, okay? But on those levels, if you look down onto this plane, you would see if there's a couple making love in just how Kala Sue said it, that the colors are so beautiful in the pinks and the purples and the blues.
Enveloping
all of creation, just like, whoosh, like this.
This is what Swami does with us.
And this energy that's there, all of creation is nurtured by it. It is infused in every single molecule and atom in creation. And it's instantly all of creation, not just a part. Now, when you make love selfishly for your own ego gratification, or you do it by yourself, whatever the way is, then it's a very small little thing. It has not much impact. It still has the color, but not much impact on creation. That's why.
A friend of ours looked at us and he goes, God, I hate my job. I don't know what to do. I mean, you guys are so mellow all the time. What do? Meditate all the time? I just can't wait to get home from my job to go meditate. Selfish, selfish, selfish. Make your life your meditation. All you have to do is any of these invocations, wherever you are. She was a waitress and she hated the job. Of course. The more you hate it, the more it's going to be a bad job for you, because you are God. You don't like it. The energies are going to show this.
What are we experiencing
Make
here?
Make your work your meditation as you're serving the food. Put a beautiful invocation in the food. Whoever eats this food, may their hearts... See, this is just Kala Sue's. Find your own that works for you. Mine is whoever eats this food, may their hearts be open to the truth that they are God also. And because you know what? We like company, right? The more the merrier, that they are God too. And may their lives be filled with joy, love, and laughter. Enjoy your food. Pretty soon, your work becomes your meditation and it's no longer work. And your paycheck is just a bonus.
A byproduct.
You are meditating 24 hours a day. All you have to do is remember that you are divine and you have this power. Pretty soon, you are thinking of God 24 hours a day.
Swami said once, he said, okay, in order to know the self, if you want to know who Swami is, you have to know the self. You will never know Swami unless you know the self.
You must discipline the mind.
You must discipline your mind.
If you're too lazy to discipline the mind, he's so cute when he said it. If you're too lazy to discipline the mind, then just think of Swami or God 24
hours
a day. Okay. What he basically said, discipline the mind
or discipline the mind.
Because to think of God 24 hours a day, you have to discipline the mind.
And you will find if you do this on the physical space here with your conscious mind, your subconscious will be impregnated by it and you will dream. And you will be in your dream experience the same.
The more you practice any of these little things of remembering to share everything with all of creation and open hearts, your mind will be rotating 24 hours on divinity. And you will be walking, talking, being God. You're just going for a walk. Whoever walks in my footprints, may their hearts be open to the truth that they're God. And so it is.
Now, for once, you're using your mind correctly. You're using it positively for the absolute truth.
Now watch his words. You, your divine self, is using the mind.
You're not being used by it.
Rotating around with thoughts and desires and things.
And when your mind is run amok, when it creates indiscriminately, this is what we get. Look at creation. We've created it. No one else did. And yes, we can fix it. But each one of us has to fix it within each of us. We can't fix it for somebody else. And that's the joke.
It could start with brushing your teeth in the morning. As you're brushing it, may all of creation have clean teeth, and may they have this feeling of freshness, and may their hearts be open, and so it is. Just as an example, with everything and anything, if your body isn't feeling well, if it's diagnosed with cancer, or you wake up with a miserable... the body is diagnosed with cancer, or the body has a miserable headache because Paramatma is perfect, has always been perfect. You can share the headache or the cancer. May this cancer or this headache relieve all of creation of cancer or headache, and so it is.
You guys, if any of you are uncomfortable, this is all free. We're all one family. Stand up, stretch, do whatever you need to do. Don't worry about that.
Might be lunchtime.
Somebody will tell us.
Yeah, tell us if we're going into lunchtime, okay?
But be free to be comfortable and to be relaxed. And if you're here sitting and your butt's sore, stand up for Christ's sake, you know. Just be happy.
Any questions about anything we've shared with
you? So far. Let's go to the... Yes.
So do you think we can still control our thoughts during sleep?
Yes.
You know you've worked when... I knew I merged into my subconscious when in my dream my mind started to get busy and I said, quiet, get in the toolbox, in my dream. Then I knew the outer merged into the subconscious.
What happens in that particular space, you become conscious in your dream just as you're conscious here, and you can manipulate your dream just like you can manipulate this moment.
I work vigilantly. This is what I practice. Every time my mind would wander to the future or the past, uncontrolled, just wander. I visualized it like a lasso. I went, get back here. I'm here right now. Get in the toolbox. Now, if I needed to plan something or work on something, I'd say, come on, let's go. Take it out of the toolbox, make my plans, do whatever, but I would not infuse any energy in any future plan.
We'll break that down for you so that you get a real good look at it.
But this is the technique that this body used. I would imagine it as something separate from me because we are divine, and that's the only truth that I choose to live with.
This is our tool, just like the mind or the emotions.
And if the mind, which for hundreds of thousands, millions of lifetimes, kept me away from my divinity, I'm not going to feed it one more little bit. This is our Mahabharata, everyone's Mahabharata, because the mind is going to say to you, wait a minute, for a million lifetimes, I had the power. I'm not going to give it back to you that easy. You have to work at it, and you have to be vigilant with it. That's why if it's not your first priority, don't even bother. Don't even bother. Indulge in play. Do whatever you need to do.
Until you're so sick
and
tired of it.
Until you are so sick and tired of it, all you want to do is make sure that mind is disciplined and silent. To the point where years later, the mind quiet knew if it just made a peep when I didn't want it to. All right, and I got to the point where if it would do anything, I say, Janima, you can't believe what this mind just said or thought. And I literally visualize the mind like a dog with a tail between the legs. I'm like, ah, ah, ah. Because for many lifetimes, we defended it. We thought it was us. And I'm no longer at that stage of defending it. It's not me.
What happened to the karma that was created in previous lives?
Okay. No, we'll explain. We'll get to that. Swami explained it really clearly. Good question. Karma is of three kinds. There is the karma that is long-standing from all of our lifetimes that ever have been, okay? And that we haven't addressed yet. There is karma that is waiting to be addressed, and then there's karma that is in motion, okay? The karma that is in motion will be experienced by all forms that are in name and form that cannot be changed, but if you know who the self is, that karma, and I'll give you a physical example. Let's say the karma would be for this person over here to be in a car accident and lose the use of their legs for the rest of their life, right? If they're ignorant of the truth, that means if they don't know who they are.
And they believe themselves,
and they believe themselves
to
be the victim and so on and so forth, believe themselves to be the body, the mind, and the senses, then they will have that karma and they will be paralyzed from the waist down. Now, if they understand that they are divine consciousness always and forever and they know the truth, then even though that karma is coming, by the fact of the knowledge or the experience of that truth, that karma may be they'll be in the accident, they'll have leg problems for about 3 or 4 weeks or maybe a month, maybe even a year, but then it will go away.
Depending on the extent of their karma.
On the karma and depending on what, how, and why it was created. A lot of times we create our own karma in order to do it as a learning experience. In other words, I give you an example. Somebody that is just diagnosed with cancer. If somebody is diagnosed with cancer at this moment and they are told they have 1 year to live, they may have created this cancer so that they have 1 year to prepare to die. You understand? What happens to us most of the time, we don't take that year to prepare to die. A lot of us don't. We become self-indulgent. We become the victim. We feel sorry for ourselves. And some of our brave ones that designed it and kind of had the feeling, they become strong and they can actually help other people. But if we design that karma for ourselves to learn from, then those parts of us are usually the ones that are always brave and smiling and say, what's your problem? I'm having the cancer. I'm not sad. I know the body has to die. We all got to die. We're all walking dead already. What's your problem? You know, it's just a matter of time, which doesn't exist anyway. But anyway, to get back to the point here, the karma that is of the three kinds, a realized being, and there's three types of them, as Swami explained. There is the one that is, the way that Swami explained it, he is like Sita's father, right? Whose name was?
Janaka,
okay? Janaka was a realized...
king, monarch.
Soul, but he was realized. And what happened to him, because he had practiced so many lifetimes before, one time he was sleeping with on his bed, he was drunk and he had his lecherous affairs with his maidens and stuff was on the bed, it was in his kingly bed. And in his dream, the celestial sage came and told him the truth. He woke up and instantly realized the truth because he had practiced many lifetimes before. So it only took that one moment and the leftover desires that he fulfilled as the king's space
to wake up.
He woke up from the bed, and from that moment he knew this was illusion, that the only reality is the self that is always, and that everything is only God.
It's
and
like, everything are you going to take the green pill or the red pill?
You know?
Like
you
in
see the
Matrix.
Movie? Matrix? Same thing.
If you take the green pill, like knowledge is power, once you know it, you can't go back.
Or you stay in the Matrix. Okay? Same idea. So Janaka did everything. He fought wars, he still had a wife, he still had kids, whatever it was. Everything continued. But he saw everything as himself, as God, as the oneness only.
No attachment.
No attachment to any single thing, and he only perceived himself as all. There was no more separation for him in anything. That's why it didn't matter to him if he ate a piece of meat or if he ate a piece of
pie
or a piece of fruit. It makes no difference at that stage. But only if you truly know within your being state of the experience that it is all only God. There is no more you. And this is what Swami taught us. As long as there is a you,
there's separation.
There's separation. As soon as there is only God, and God does everything like Krishna taught us.
God, he said, all-loving, all-inclusive, and all-powerful.
Krishna taught us nishkarma karma. What does that mean? It means if you dedicate every thought, every word, every deed to God.
Meaning there is no longer a ego self-identification of you.
Doing something, wanting something, having a result to something, being something. There's no thought of that anymore. There's only God animating you as the form.
In God.
In God.
Around
by God.
By God.
That is nishkarma karma. The karma that will come to the body will be absorbed by the God creation. There will be no identification of you. If Janama tomorrow would get cancer, Janama wouldn't have cancer. The body may have cancer, but that has nothing to do with Janama. Even though Janama is the name of the body. But you know what I'm saying. So the moment you identify as either being only the instrument of God, and dedicate everything to him, and only God is acting through you in all the ways. That's one method. Another one is to be the God in your conscious awareness. Or, like Janaka did, he was totally aware as himself as all, and God being only that omnipresent, eternal, pure mind awareness state, which is what Swami taught us. Now, your choice is very simple.
And the key is the mind, truly. It all rests in the mind.
And your desire of how much you want it Depending on your desire will be your result. If you desire it a little bit, then your result will be a little. If you desire it more than life itself, then it can be instant. You can do it right this second. And we will share with you how we can do this together. We will walk through it so we can all experience it.
Practically.
Yes.
Practically.
Yes, time and space are created by the mind as a tool. Time is a tool that we use in order to have a regimentated continuation of our existence in this illusion, in this dream form. In other words, I'll give you the example and how it is not real. Let's say here you are, right? Luis, here you're sitting, right? Okay, you're Luis, right? Tonight you're gonna go to sleep, right? You're not going to be aware that you're going to be Luis at night, right? You're going to have a dream maybe, or you're not going to have a dream, right? Right? So, next morning you wake up, and you will wake up as Luis, right? How is that possible? Unless consciousness was absolutely continuous. If consciousness were able to be broken up, then he would wake up as somebody completely different. He would not know that he was Luis before. He wouldn't know. There would be no way. He would be somebody different for each of us. So therefore, the idea of separating consciousness, which is what time does, time separates consciousness and space, right? Space. Take the air in the room. Come on, divide the air in the room for me. Do it. You cannot. Think of outer space, all of the space that contains all of the planets, all the universes. Try to divide it. You cannot. It is one uniform experience, and everything is contained in space, does it not? All right. So space is the foundation of every object, is it not? Everything rises, every object rises up out of space, and again disappears when it turns to dust or whatever, right? The same with silence. All sound originates in silence. You know, in the little folder that we got, it said silence was our, you know, weekend here. What does silence really mean, guys? I've observed the silence that you're
If the being. Mind is noisy, why are you being quiet?
Most of you were not silent. You may have not spoken, but you were not silent. I mean, it was noisy silence, guys.
It was the noisiest room this morning.
And it was not the speaking. Remember, we are so programmed to believe in these little slots and things.
But if you're on top of the mind, you go, every time it starts to wander, go, get back here. Get in the toolbox. And it takes this discipline. It's no different than a little child going, Mommy, 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 quiet. Mommy, Mommy, quiet. Mommy, Mommy, quiet. It's the same. Either you discipline it or you let it continue doing this.
Now, Swami said one time, he says, as long as you're the child of God and you do this, Mommy, 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 at a certain time, God will pick you up and say, all right, I'll take care of you. But he says, but that child has to grow up, and when a child is finally in college, I'm not going to pick it up anymore.
And
you're
we
all
are in college.
Graduating university, guys, okay?
Or you wouldn't have manifested us, and we wouldn't be sharing this with you that Swami shared with us.
Now let's cut to the chase here, guys. Everything we have said, everything word spoken, is illusion. Because the truth is, and it's absolute, and those of you who know it and experience it, that there is only God playing as all the parts.
We were in South America, we were in Peru, and we were sharing this. And a gal stood up and she goes, you know what, I feel it in my inner, Swami. I feel you're right. We do have this power and we gave it away. We are divine and we gave it away. She goes, I really hate my job, but I can't quit. My boss is a real jerk and it's hard to get work. Is there anything I can do? And we said, there's a lot you can do. What do you do at your job? And she was the office manager. So we said, okay, what are your daily routines? And she goes, well, you know, first thing, my grumpy boss, I have to make him his coffee in the morning, organize his desk, his appointments, and just manage the office and everybody else. So we said, okay, time to be a little sneaky. You have any verbooty?
Let's play a little.
Let's
come
play.
On.
And she goes, yeah, okay. Put a little in his coffee. Then, when you give him his coffee, infuse it. May your heart be opened with whatever prayer that you feel is required. Again, may your heart be open to the truth that you are God, have always been God, and may your life be filled with joy, love, and laughter. And so it is.
May you be a happy person.
And you get to his office before he does, and she goes, okay, go sit in his chair. Infuse his chair. Okay, may your life be filled with joy, love, and laughter, and if I do my job well, I'll get a raise. Everybody else will get a raise, and the business will prosper, and whatever. And may your heart be open to the truth that you are God. So it is. Touch his pencils on his desk. Touch his desk. Touch his mail. Infuse this with all the positive, loving energies. And she goes, okay, I've got nothing to lose because I hate it, and I want to make it better. I'll try it. It so happened that we were
passing through Peru again
like a few weeks later. She was there again, and she wasn't there alone. She had the office staff was there. She started doing it, and within 1 week, the boss was really, she was sharing this with the group. The boss was really starting to change. He was being really nice to her.
He couldn't figure out why he was doing it either.
So the other employees were starting to have thought forms of, is she having an affair with him? So they accosted her with this, and she goes, no! So she shared with them what she was doing, and they liked it. So pretty soon, everybody in the office
was doing
the same thing. Well, business prospered. It went up. They all got raises. She shared this with everybody. Within a month, they all got raises, and the business had prospered. She goes, it works. Our thoughts are all powerful.
And the people were there. He says, we testify to it.
They were very cute.
Just this, just a small example, guys. And what we're sharing with you, find your own way. We'll share some other methods with you that you know, have been given by all the different sages.
Now, the mind will say, oh, self-realization, liberation, oh, maybe next lifetime. Or if you practice really hard and you go sit on some Himalayan mountaintop and relinquish everything and wear tattered rags, yes, maybe you'll be self-realized. Tell the mind to shut up and go in the toolbox, because you are already self-realized. The mind will put the words like liberation,
moksha, self-realization,
on these pedestals that are so unreachable.
Again, we put it like God, unreachable thing. The mind does that in order to keep control, guys.
Now, we were, a few years back, we were at Swami's, and it was during Shivaratri. And there was so much rigmarole going on. And here Swami has had us traveling all over the world, basically saying, it's time to grow up. Worship is beautiful, and a stage we have to walk through, but it's time
to go beyond it and be
God. And there's very easy techniques that Swami showed us how we can be Swami. Well, I'm seeing all the worshiping, all the rigmarole going on, and I started going, Swami, what's going on? Are we doing something wrong? I mean, you're allowing all of this. And every once in a while, I hear it in his discourse.
Since the 60s,
you've
taught us this, and we've gone all over the world sharing this.
It's basically, it's time to be Swami, not look at Swami as separate from you. So I had these thoughts. All of a sudden, Swami called us in. So we were sitting at his feet, and there was an elderly Indian man sitting across from me on a chair. And all of a sudden, as the man jumped off his chair.
You had the thought again.
Well, as the man jumped off his chair and grabbed Swami's feet, saying, I am the greatest devotee of yours. My life is filled with worship and devotion
morning,
to
noon,
you.
And night.
Morning, noon, and night, Swami. I was thinking at the same time, Swami, you're having us travel all over the world, basically telling people to stop worshiping you and be you and be the example of you. Are we doing anything wrong? And at that moment, as I said, wrong, Swami lifted up the man, shook him like this, and he says, no, no, no. Worship lie. Worship illusion. You are God. You are Swami. Know this now.
You have no more time to waste.
The man was so shook, like he was going to have a heart attack right then on there on the spot. I was like, thank you.
Okay. Said separation.
Separation, lie.
Worship.
Duality.
Is a slight separation. Get rid of the separation. Make it one. And for us to be able to do that, we have to love ourselves.
First.
Without loving ourselves, it cannot be done. And we don't mean the personality or the ego or the mind or
Nobody
the emotional
likes
self.
That.
Nobody likes any of those. You know, at least not from another part. So who is it that we love? And what is it that we love? We have to first find out who we are. And if we are not interested in finding out who we are, believing that we already know who we are, then we have to deal with the Maya just the way we've dealt with it before. But if we want to change and make that last step and grow up and be God, then we have to practice something. And we have to find out what it is that works for us.
Anything.
Something. And we'll share some more of the techniques that the different avatars have
but
shared.
But Swami was so cute with it. He says, you must practice something all the time. As long as you are breathing in these dream bodies, he said, you must practice being God in one way or another.
And
he
right
said, it is so simple because God is simple. But it isn't easy because it's
constant.
And you just have to remember. Now, anything we've shared with you, does it sound difficult?
Does it sound hard? Is it impossible?
It's just remembering.
But your mind will say, they're full of shit. I mean, that's what your mind will say. It may not use that word, but it'll say the same thing.
You are and have always been all-loving, all-inclusive, and all-powerful. And the mind stole that from you and used it for its own play. But basically, the mind is doing its job. We gave it the power. We said, entertain us. Do this. I give you all of this. I'm bored.
And your mind will not want to give up your worship for a form because it is used to it. It feels comfortable. It feels if it keeps doing that, it'll have control over your body, over your mind, over your emotion, over every part of your life.
But that slight separation will prevent you from merging into the oneness that you always are and have been.
And the way to do it, if you're truly lovingly involved with a form of God, that's beautiful. Just dedicate everything to it and there's no more you. Let you be erased and let only God be, you be the instrument for that God part.
That works too.
That works perfectly. And it is the truth.
The mind is a tool for your divine self.
We ask Swami, when these bodies die, right? And if we love a form like Krishna or Rama or a Sai Baba or Jesus Christ or Buddha or somebody, what happens? He said, you will merge with that form. I said, wait a minute. Merge with that form? Well, what are you telling me? What are you telling me? And he said, yes, because you still are dealing in the form, you will attain the form.
Then he leaned over and he goes, remember, name and form
illusion. He said, if you want to merge into your omnipresent state, which you always are.
And have always been.
And can never not be. He said, and be aware of that. Then you have to let go of all thoughts, all feelings, all concepts, all ideas.
Of separation.
Of all name and form separation. And we can experience that all together. But it takes investigation. Remember we said.
An experience. Without and faith. Faith that the sages and saints and the avatars haven't lied to us.
Why would they lie to us? What did they get out of it?
Jesus
was nailed.
Jesus got hung on the cross for telling everybody.
He said, all right, bring the nails, guys. You know, come on, let's do it. You know. Why did he do that? Because he made a choice to stand for his divine self. He crossed out his physical ego, as Swami said. He put it on the cross for all of us to watch. He was showing us in a physical experience. I'm not the body. Watch me come back. I am eternal. So this is that day, isn't it? So let's resurrect the Christ consciousness in all of us today. That Christ consciousness that we are, have always been, that psi consciousness, Christ consciousness that we are. That's the resurrection that's happening. And that's why we're all here. So it's time for all of us to investigate, and we'll do some of it together. But in the final analysis, you must investigate. Without that investigation, which is 90% of all sadhana, remember this. First, it's outer investigation.
Question everything.
Then
inquire.
It's inner investigation. Without that investigation, nothing happens. And without self-confidence, you will not investigate. It is not possible. Swami said, without self-confidence, nothing in this creation or any other creation can ever be done. Without it, nothing works. If you have self-confidence, and he says, it'll come by doing something well, you know, like we've all, when we teach the kids how to be of service in a loving way, you know, cleaning the table out of love space instead of, oh God, I gotta clean the table. Mom said so, I hate it. But, you know, that's another kind of consciousness. So by being in that one consciousness of being of service in the loving space of interacting, then you get self-confidence for doing something positive, something good. That's different than doing, let's say, I'm really good at computers and I'm doing well and I'm in class and the teacher comes and says, oh, you're doing a great job with your computer. I feel really proud and good. That's self-confidence too, but that one will go away. If I go out and help somebody with some kind of service or be of service, that lasts forever for us because it feels good. It feels right, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel just perfect? In other words, if there's a blind man walking across the street, our natural reaction is
to reach and to help.
Let me help.
But then the mind kicks in and goes, oh, he's dirty. I don't want to touch him. Or, oh, I'm going to be late for work. I got to go do something else. But your first divine instinct is to help him cross the street. It's your first urge.
It's natural.
But then the mind kicks in and changes that.
Now, I felt a couple of thoughts here, so I'm going to go to it for a second. And the question in the mind was this. If everything is God in this world, why is there pain and suffering, and why are we reaching for bliss? That was pretty much the question. I rephrased it slightly. It was a feeling. Why do you all want bliss? Why do you always look for happiness or joy? Why? Yes, it is our basic nature. Now, the little things that we experience, like food, drugs, sex, booze, whatever we think is pleasant for us, why do we reach for these things? Because they're little bits of bliss that reminds of us who we are.
And have always been.
When it does harm to the body, like drugs and booze and too much food and all these things, can cause harm to the physical frame. When it causes harm to the frame, the bliss gets lost. Because then the body
takes priority.
So that's why Swami says, put a ceiling on your desires, whatever they may be. Because if you keep feeding the fire, it'll burn forever. So.
And another thing, when Swami says, bring me everything, and when he asks you, what do you want? Just bring me everything. We must be, for this path to be God, you have to be ruthlessly honest with yourself. And ruthless with a capital R, completely honest with yourself. If there's some little leftover desires, you need to bring them out and expose them, and he will fulfill them for you. So you have to be careful what you ask for.
When Swami asks you, what do you want? Who do you think he's asking? He's asking your Paramatma consciousness of?
No, that's perfect. It needs nothing. He's saying, what's left? Tell me what's left so we can get rid of it and move on.
Swami promised us. He said, I promise. I will do whatever it takes to get you back to yourself. Because even I will never be enough for you.
I will even destroy this frame
for you.
For you to get you back to yourself.
And we watched him do it.
Oh, that was cute. We had a friend who was
long ago.
His religion was Jewish. He loved God
in the omnipresent form,
which was perfect. And he was loving husband, wonderful in the community.
But he was very emotional.
Very emotional. And he had met us and wanted to know Swami after meeting us. He goes, whatever you guys are into, I want to be into it.
I need to.
And a part of us intuitively felt his emotional body. He's great the way he is, honestly. If he sees Swami, he's going to become an ashramite.
He's going to
just
hang out.
He's going to leave his family, leave everything, and he's going to just want to hang out there. He was that type of a being. Just a feeling.
We said, Swami, this is your game. Please, keep him away.
Next time you go, I want to go with you. So we said, okay, yeah, sure, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it turned out he found out where we were going.
He met us at the airport.
And, okay, Swami, this is your gig. And this was probably so we could share this with you to show you the extent that Swami will go to for you. One little extent. Well, Swami called us all in.
He was so sweet.
So
he
was put the man right in front
next
of his
to him. So loving, so sweet to him in every way you can imagine.
And the man was going, my God, he's God, he's God. I'm not leaving, I'm staying. You know, these were
his thoughts.
Words
we could
and his thoughts
feel them,
and his
sense
feelings.
Them.
And right in front of him, Swami looks over at us and
he looks
winks.
At us and winks.
Like that. And then pulls up his sleeve. Puts his hand in his sleeve and pulls out a watch.
But he did it really quick.
So quickly, but we all saw it.
Very obvious.
The man saw it.
He pulls out this watch from his sleeve.
And gives it to our friend.
With a big smile, he says, oh,
you like? And the man's like, leans over at Janma like,
did you see that?
And Swami's just all
smiles.
You like it? And the man turns it over, made in Taiwan or in the back.
It didn't work. It was broken. The watch was broken.
And so he put his head, Swami blessed him, put his hand on his head, rubbed his back, right? And said, you go now. Well, the man walked out going, he's a fake.
He's a fraud.
Did you see this?
See that? Oh, guys.
And we're just like,
very happy, Swami. Thank you, Swami.
A part of us knew what... I mean, we've sat in front of Swami and watched things crystallize,
in front
materialize.
Of
his, not even him doing this, them just...
We've watched him bring back Walter Cowan from the dead. So come on, guys, you know. He pulls it
Swami
out.
Swami will do whatever it takes to get you back to yourself.
The man went back home.
Ah, yeah.
Loved his family, was a great asset to his community, was selfless service to the rest of his life, and loved the formless God eternally.
He didn't need the form, in a form.
He needed nothing.
Would Swami be doing his job if he loved Swami's form and propagated that? No.
So, understand, for some of you who've just lately met Swami, you're very fortunate. Like Kala Sue, it was so difficult for her to get rid of the form. You should ask her. It was.
He beat the crap out of me.
It was work for Swami to break the form out of Kala Sue's consciousness.
Now we can play. Now I look at him. He calls us in. Heart doesn't throb. I just with Grandpa.
We just play.
We just play. Oneness. There's no difference. And when he tries to tease us or trick us, I go, Maya. And he goes,
shh, quiet. You know, the most beautiful time we've ever had with Swami all the time, he grabbed our hands, we sat on the floor together, and we were just silent.
Quiet.
Just being in the oneness.
There's no need to perform, no need to
speak,
say anything.
Nothing. Silence is the only real message of all of us. But sometimes we can point the way with words, like road signs, you know? And that's all what we are doing, is pointing the way. But you have to walk it.
Take back your powers.
Take back your power. Yes. Okay, 1968, Indra Devi.
Beginning of 1968.
She was a yoga teacher, world-renowned, and she had just finished her esoteric
course
from her master in India, and she had met Sai Baba. As she was coming home, Richard Bach, a friend of hers, and we were friends of Richard's, picked her up from the airport.
And she was ranting and raving, "I found God! I found God!"
And Richard thought, "Oh, God, not
another guru, Mataji, like this."
Enough. So she gave him a small black and white picture about this big. Okay?
And she was sharing that night at the East-West Cultural Center in L.A.
So Richard took the picture home with him, and he put it on his desk as he came in the front door. And we showed up a couple hours later. We walked in, we looked at the picture, and instantly knew who it was.
We asked him, "Who's that?" It was a recollection. I don't know, but it felt like he wanted to grab him.
I wanted to hold him, wrestle with him, and say, "What goddamn time did you take to get here?" You know, I mean, that was the feeling.
I looked at him and said, "Where have you been?" And that's the same thing that Swami said to me. "Where
have you been?"
And that's what I said to the picture. It was cute.
And Janama's personality was a little bit boyish and a little bit harsher,
playful,
you know. So
playful.
I said, "Hey," I said, "buddy, where have you been?" You know, like this. And on our first experience in the physical form with Swami, he walked by, he says, "Talk later, buddy." Just like that, you know. And then next time he walked by and he said, "See you later, okay." You know, and it was perfect slang English, you know, very playful. It was no accent at all. We've heard him speak in different language. He can speak perfect English, don't be deluded. We ask him, "Why, Swami, why you play this game?" He says, "They like it." And he said, "But you talk sometimes and nobody understands you." He said,
"And the heart always understands."
He says, "I plant seeds."
Yeah.
"Oh, okay." It'll come to the surface for all of us at the right moment when we need to know it. It'll come to us. He said, and a lot of times, like with Kala Sue in the beginning, he talked like for 20 minutes straight.
Yeah,
like,
in the very beginning, I think I was in there for 15 minutes. He was like rattling on and on and on, and all I caught was just a few consciously blurps of this and that. And they all asked me, "You were in there for so long," and I heard him talk. "What was he saying to you?" I went, "I don't know."
No idea.
I don't know. But it all
came up.
Surfaced at the right time, at the perfect time.
So we have to choose. And Swami, a few years back, he says, "I'm drawing a line in the sand."
Yes.
Remember? A few
no
years
more
back?
Gray region.
He said, "The plane is taking
You're
off.
You're either worm food or divine. Which sounds better?"
The line in the sand is what? It's your choice. And it's only one.
You either walk in the truth or walk in the Maya. And they're both perfect because it's all God.
It's all God.
And we chose it to experience it and play in it.
And listen, no one will be left behind.
There is no behind.
There is no behind. There's only different experiences that we either wish to end or wish to continue.
But start having fun with your spirituality, with your powers.
What is not spiritual if everything is God? It is only an interpretation.
And everyone and everything is perfect.
Unto themselves and their learning experience. So stop meddling, stop judging. Who are you judging? What are you judging? And you will only judge yourself if you do it, because then there's something left in you that you're seeing in the other person that you're judging. How can you judge someone? Now, there is a difference, and I'll give you the difference. Let's say we're walking down the street, all of us, right? And in this little corner over here is a child molester with a little girl or a little boy going to molest that child. Well, we are there too. So we are part of the scenario. We are part of the experience. So we have to stand for what we believe in. So we will walk over, grab the child, and said, "As long as I'm here, that child is not going to get molested. I'm not angry at the child molester. I'm not feeling sorry for the child. I'm just taking my stand to my belief. And I'll walk over, and if the guy pulls out a gun and shoots the body, great, fine, no problem. Then he can do what he wants afterwards. But as long as I'm here, that child will not be molested. End of story. For my level of experience. Because whatever we are part of is also for us. You can't divorce yourself from it. You can't say, oh, I'm not part of this. No. If you're there, you're part of it, regardless of what. It's you. And you're experiencing this scenario. Deal with it. Deal with it either from your personality, ego-mind complex, or deal with it from your divine understanding complex.
Any questions about anything that we've shared with you? No secrets. We're all one.
Any confusions?
It's affecting you.
That's the Mahabharata part. You have to be able to make the separation and say, there. In other words, if I call you a child molester, a murderer, a womanizer, or whatever I call you, if you're affected by that, then you have a problem. That means you identify that those things are not right for you, it's wrong. But the truth is, if you're everything, you are the child molester, you are the murderer, you are all the things that are in creation.
We most likely have done it all, played it all, been it all.
So what's the problem? So somebody calls you a name, or somebody calls you stupid, or whatever they call you, or however they interpret you, that's their perception.
What would Swami say? If you're proud of your name, I will destroy it. If you're
attached to your wealth, I will take it.
I will take it away.
If you're attached to your family, I will separate you.
If you're attached to your body, I will disintegrate it.
But only if you want to know the self. If you don't, I'll leave it for you. I'll give it to you. You guys, you've got to investigate. You can't just blindly read something and say, oh, I know, I understand. It is not enough.
We've been in the room where there was a lady. She said, Swami, I want liberation
now.
Please, I want liberation now. Are you ready? He goes, and she goes, ready? Yes, are you ready? Well, what do you mean, Swami?
He raised his hand like this. You ready?
You ready? And she's like, no, no.
He said, no, she asked, ready, what do you mean? He said, you're going to drop your body right now.
And she goes, no.
I have to call my children. I have to fix this. I have to do that. I have to take care of this. He says,
and he goes, attachment, you're not ready.
So, listen, guys. You do not know how many moments of experience we have left. None of us do. You're already walking dead. Accept it. See it. Perceive it. Know it. Now take this moment and find out what it's all about. What is the truth? Why are you here? What are you doing? Why are you attached to things that are temporary, not real, and change all the time? That means your mind, your emotion, your feeling, your thoughts, and your knowledge. It's all bullshit, pardon me. Okay? It is a tool that we can use in order to facilitate ourselves. You don't teach it, you are the example of it only. You can share it if somebody is open enough to listen to you in words. If not, you have to do it in an action that they will either recognize or not. And the result is not your business. You can just be it. That's all you need to do is be it. You don't need to talk about it. You never need to say a word.
And if you feel they're open, you can share with them your experiences
of it.
And
but only if they ask or if they're open. Otherwise, you're meddling. You may stop them. Swami said once to us, he says, be very careful.
If they come to you and ask for help, you have the door open.
Always open.
The door's open. But if they want nothing from you, then you got to be very cautious about trespassing.
Because we so much, and Kala Sue is a perfect example. She's the mother of creation here. She always wants everybody to learn the easy way and not to have pain and suffering. And I said, why?
He's cruel.
Why? It's a self-created thing. Let them enjoy it.
But they can avoid it.
No, they can't.
Share with them. All right, fine. You're right.
No. There is nowhere to get. There is nothing to reach.
There is
nothing
to
gain.
This is where I go. They're perfect. perfect.
This is where you look at the big picture.
Perfect, and I can't say it isn't. It is. No matter what, everything, no matter how ghastly, horrible, great, or beautiful, it's perfect.
Swami taught us to have a perception.
And that is the truth. There either is the lie or the truth.
There's no gray. There's no in between.
And to be honest with you, I remember living in the gray where, oh, it's okay,
but no.
There's no progression. There's no growth. And you die confused. There either you stand for the truth and you stand with a flaming sword for it.
But first you have to find out what that is.
Or you stand for the lie, the illusion. One or the other. And if you live in the truth, you cannot complain, oh, my son's not paying attention to me, or
oh, my daughter died yesterday in a car crash.
Oh, my daughter died in a fire. Truth is, nothing dies. Truth is, you are Atma playing mother.
And nothing really has happened
at all. And you hold on to it with all of your force. And this is when the Vedas say it is your Mahabharata. We have read that book, haven't we? It's not an easy battle. It was the most grotesque, brutal, bloody, horrific battle. And to know the truth and to stand for it and live in it and discipline the mind and walk through Maya and control it.
You have to cut off the head of the world.
This is your Mahabharata.
The world will stand against
you. And literally there's times where I feel like I'm holding two flaming swords and I'm going, no.
The world will stand against you and say you're absolutely nuts. You're crazy.
And throughout your life, you will test yourself to see how we're advancing, how we're growing. And oops, Maya got me there, not next time. Or this Maya got me there, not next time.
This is what satsang really is, to help each other, remind each other of the truth.
Each time
when one of us falls down, you know, we scrape our chins or we fall back into the game.
When you come to satsang at the centers and you say, oh, my husband, he lost his job and this happened and that. Wait a minute. Okay, this is happening to the body. Your husband, that body lost the job. Separate and identify everything for what it is. There must be something better around the corner. There must be something karmic happening. Something is changing in your life. See it, everything. You eventually see everything and remind each other of a different perspective. If I woke up in the morning and said, oh, Janama, I have a headache. And he goes, what has a headache?
Who has a headache?
The body has a headache.
Padamatma perfect.
This is our constant practice. And being husband and wife, playing husband and wife, this is our duty to each other.
This is how we can help one another. We don't help each other by cooking somebody's food for a day. Now, that's very nice. A nice service is beautiful. But you're going to be hungry in 2 hours again. Who's going to feed you then, you know? So what is service except love? If it isn't love, then service is lip service. Then service is a momentary thing that we do to keep us occupied from doing or creating more karma for ourselves.
Let's do love marches on, and that'll be good for
yes.
You.
Yes? Because you're part of it. You're aware of it. If you weren't aware of it, then it would be perfect. But you are there, then it's part of your karma too. Then you're part of the karmic situation. See,
there's
karma
a reason why you are there. Is that what you're talking about? If you are there and this is happening?
There is no accident. There is no victim. Exactly. So then it's perfect. But if you're there, you're part of it and you know better. So you, in your being state, being part of the situation, you have to stand for what you believe, whatever that is. Yes. I mean, if you want to molest a child with him, go for it, you know. But that, again, would be a karmic space, which has happened before. Yes.
What if she knows that she can't go back to a child who's waiting for her and he pulls the gun and shoots her?
Pardon?
Cody's example.
Okay, I'll give you Cody's example, our son's example. It's so clear this
up.
This body's son, okay? No, listen carefully. Yes, Her child can wait the moment that it takes for her to take the child and walk away. It doesn't take long to stop the child molester, guys. You know, you're letting your mind make a big deal out of something that is not a big deal.
But your mind also must go to, this is karmic.
I'm here. What am I supposed to be doing here? Why am I here this moment?
Yes. There's a reason why you're there.
You are God for that. At that point, you're a God for that child intervening in its karma and helping the karma to be alleviated. You are the God part.
You're the rescue angel.
Okay. So, back to the question. Our son, when he was about 13 years old, now, you have to understand, we live in the mountains, and when the children were young, we taught them how to use guns and how to shoot, because all their friends in the community, they all go out hunting and shoot guns. So if the kids would be not knowing about guns, they could blow their heads off and eat their
friends'
heads
off. Knowledge is power.
You know, in that way, you have to learn the physical experience of the things. So we taught them how to shoot well and to respect the gun for what it is. Gun is only for two things, to make a lot of noise or to kill somebody. That's it. It's not for any other reason. That's the usage of a gun, okay? So we taught them the usage. And they said, okay. And he said, one day he came home from school. I guess he'd been talking or thinking. And understand the question that he asked this body. He asked, Dad, I have a question for you. If somebody would come with a gun, stand in the doorway, and want to kill Mom and Shanti and me, we were downstairs, and you would be upstairs where the guns are, what would you do? That was his question.
Because he knows how passive. Jonama takes spiders outside. Yeah.
So okay. I asked, well, before I answer your question, I have to ask you a question. And my question is the man shooting the gun, or is he only waving it around yelling? And he said, he's waving it around, yelling, he's going to shoot us. I said, then I would jump down from the top of the stairs and stand in front of his gun, maybe take the gun away from him if I could, but I would ask him, what are you doing? And why are you doing it? And if he would shoot me, then I guess he could shoot you. But without me dying first, he would not touch you. I said, but if he was shooting, then he would be dead before he crossed the threshold because he would cause the reaction through this part to shoot him. I would have no animosity, I would have no feeling, but he would be dead before he crossed the threshold. Does that answer your question? No, I wouldn't shoot anything. By the gun that would be used by this body and he would be shot, but I wouldn't be shooting him, he would shoot himself through this vehicle.
It would be an automatic action, reaction. Now, if Jonama would have anger and animosity and say, oh, I hate you, or this energy.
I want to kill you so you don't kill my family.
Karma.
Karma.
He would have karma. But if he had no feeling whatsoever and only gave the man his reaction, no karma.
Here's a quick one, and then we can go to lunch. This is the last one for now, and then we continue.
We were in the room when a judge, a circuit court judge in India.
An Indian judge.
Was in the room with Swami, and he was very worried about something, and he asked Swami, Swami, when I have to
kill,
put men in
to death
because of their wrong actions, do I get karma for
it? He says, I'm so worried that I will get karma, Swami, please alleviate my karma. And Swami says, I ask you a question. And he says, when you condemn them to death, if it is, let's say, it's a rapist, murderer, and he's a serial killer, and you condemn him to death, what are your feelings? How do you think? He says, well, I understand by your teaching, Swami, that we're all Atma playing on the stage of the world, and they're having their experience as the serial killer and child molester. And even though it really bothers me as a person, I wish the person well and say, I hope you learn this lesson fast, and it'll be easy for you, and hope that the divine Atma part will learn.
And he just...
I just do my duty,
as
the judge. He says, no karma.
The judge. He said, only if you hate him or show anger or animosity of he deserves this.
If you believe he deserves this punishment, then you will get karma.
Because you are invoking emotional input in the sentence.
You then become separate. The moment you believe in separation, you will experience the karma of that separation.
Separation begets separation.
Yes.
And karma.
Beg your pardon?
If he feels he doesn't deserve it?
Because it's the law. It's the law. We all agreed on this law. It's on the books. It's written. It's a law. In our position, we have a court. We have jurors. We have a jury. The jury is our peers. They judge us for whatever it is, right or wrong. If you get a good lawyer nowadays, that's why justice is not anywhere realistic in our society, because justice can be bought.
But karma is perfect justice. You
know? Karma is absolute justice without any emotion, without anything. It's simple, the ball bouncing off the wall. You know, it's action, reaction. And it is always the same, whether good, bad, right, or wrong. The action will always be. It's your identification as you having made the action, then you get the result. If there is no you having the action, then there is no you accepting the result. It may come to the form or be part of it, like we're all together in America, right? We're all Americans, or we are here in America having our livelihood. Well, karma in America is part of our karma. There is a karma for the United States.
There's even a nation karma.
There's a karma for each family, for each person, for each society, for each country, for each city, for each neighborhood.
But again, we chose it, and it's all perfect.
And we are part of it, so we have to interact and deal with it. Now, how we deal with it is the only important question. If we deal with it from our personality, ego, mind, identification, or if we deal from our God understanding, who we are, identification. That's it. Always the same. It never goes in any other direction, guys. And one more thing, then we can go to lunch. Sorry if we're over, but we'll continue. Swami said that in this experience that we are creating for ourselves, always and eternally, the only thing that matters is how much love we share every moment of our life. That's it. Let's go to lunch. Sai Ram Swami, thank you for Love and Light. We'll continue.